Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, it's John Williams. We have kind of a pretty sky downtown, not entirely gray, not entirely sunny, but also some cold and some snow is coming, which is what January is supposed to do, right? Producer Elif and I were yesterday. What's the matter, Dave?
It's February.
Start again in 3, 2, 1. It's 9:13 on WGN Radio. This is John Williams. Happy February to y'all. We spent some time looking at the January, though.
Oh, I got you.
Calendar.
Sorry.
And we added up all of the high temperatures and then the ones that we've had in February. And we went all the way back to last Christmas. And we averaged out what the average high temperature is. What would you say the average high temperature has been since Christmas week?
38.
Producer Elif! What is the average high temperature since Christmas week, please?
39 degrees, John.
Yeah. But think about that. The average high temperature in the throes of Chicago winter has been 39. Mm-hmm. And remember, on Christmas Day, it was 67. And we've had some 50s in there. I thought it was going to be over 40. So I don't know who's keeping score, but they're going to even it out a little bit now with this cold patch. But it's actually going to be a short-lived one, and then and some snow, and that'll melt pretty quickly, too. So
I had a conversation, John, with my doctor recently about this. He said because it's not been super cold this winter, he's seeing a lot more people come in with sort of like squishy ears and things that have to do with humidity because it's not been cold and dry to dry those things out.
I literally looked at the humidity on my phone last night because my brother's in Arizona and he's always sending me screenshots of Arizona. And the humidity where he was 34%, but it was in the mid-60s for us. And I would expect it to be drier than that, you know what I mean? Drier than that. It's been not.
I just want to know what squishy ears are.
So
I noticed that, and I didn't want to ask Mary, so, but now that we're there.
Yeah, well, I will explain. So I'm having a problem in my left ear where it feels like every once in a while, it's like I have water in my ear, like I've been swimming, and I haven't. That's what that is.
Squishy.
Squishy ear.
Can we call it swimmer's ear?
Could we just...
Well, yeah.
You guys can cover me on this. It's 9:21. Jussie Smollett continues to be in the news. I'm sorry, but there it is. This has been the dangdest... almost exactly 12 months for him and for us. Steve Grzanich continues to update you in the news. Another reporter will join us later in the show to kind of catch up on this. I was thinking, okay, where are we again? Because if you just came here, or even if you've been here the whole time, I'll forgive you if you don't remember the details. So I wrote them down, and I think I can do it in 90 seconds. If I go fast, cover me. TV star activist rapper Jussie Smollett said he was attacked last January 29th at 2 a.m. when it was super cold downtown by two racist homophobic men wearing MAGA hats who punched him, poured bleach on him, and put a noose around his neck, which was still conveniently around his neck when the cops arrived. The world was like, oh my God, 50,000 Chicago cops go to work on this, but Jussie won't hand over his phone because, you know, he's a victim. Then, on Valentine's Day, cops arrest two people of interest, brothers from Nigeria, extras on Smollett's show Empire. Guess what they had at their home? A red hat and bleach. Aha! Hey, said a caller to my show, do you have a red hat and bleach at your home? Okay, good point. Jussie goes on, Good Morning America, and cries. Everyone cries. The police are still on Team Jussie publicly, but February 17th, police have let the brothers go, and they want to talk to Jussie. He's now a suspect for filing a false report. The rapper 56 calls Jussie a liar, so there's that. And Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson says that Jussie set the whole thing up to help his career. And you're like, how's that working out for you, Jussie? Fox Entertainment issues a statement about Jussie's career with them saying about their show, we are considering our options, which is what pirates say when they have a sword in your back and you're standing on a plank. The brothers lawyer up and they're say they're really sorry for their role in the hoax. March 14th, Jussie pleads not guilty to 16 counts of disorderly conduct. It's really 8, but Chicago authorities are so angry at him, they voted twice. 12 days later, miraculously for Jussie, crazily for everybody else, all the charges are dropped. His lawyer says he was a victim made to appear as a perpetrator. Hearing about this for the first time, Eddie Johnson is like, wait, what? Who? Mayor Rahm Emanuel can't believe it either. Even the prosecutor on the case, who isn't Kim Fox, more about that later, says he thinks Jussie is guilty. The prosecutor thinks Jussie's guilty, but since Jussie forfeited $10,000 bond and did pretend community service, justice has been served. Now Chicago's really ticked. It wants Jussie to pay the $130,000 it spent covering the case. The brothers also sued Jussie for damaging their reputations, which may be true, but it's hard to prove for people who don't have reputations. Special Prosecutor Dan Webb is assigned to the case, and yesterday a grand jury indicted Smollett on 6 counts of disorderly conduct, making this the most celebrated case of disorderly conduct in American history. Thank you. I will not be doing that again, in case you missed it. The Westminster Dog Show was yesterday, 144th annual. The winner is a ridiculous-looking standard poodle named Seba. Best in show. One of only 4 breeds that has won the annual contest 5 times or more. So the standard poodles kind of rock that thing. As you know, this represents a bit of an upset since Dog News Magazine had picked Bono, last year's runner-up, coming out of the toy group, to win it all this year. Bono also finished 2nd to Thor, the bulldog, at the National Dog Show over Thanksgiving. So the third most popular breed, this year's Cinderella and crowd favorite, was a golden retriever named Daniel. Golden retrievers are America's third most popular breed, but a golden has never won best in show. America loves its golden retrievers. They never win the dang thing. And here was Daniel prancing around, looking really good, and the crowd was behind it. Daniel did not win.
Well, their day is coming. The Cubs didn't win for 108 years.
Goldens are the Chicago Cubs of baseball.
No.
Wait until next year.
Okay, so then if goldens are the third most, what are the 1 and 2 most popular breeds in America, according to the American
Kennel Club? I know.
Steve?
The number one is Labrador Retriever.
That's what I was going to say, too.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yes.
And Goldens are number 3. Number 2 is a bit of a surprise to me, German Shepherds. I mean, you see them, but not as much as you used to. German Shepherds are number 2. One of the Labs, 2 are the Shepherds, 3 are the Retrievers.
I have a Labrador Retriever, and we started boycotting the Westminster Dog Show a few years ago when it was revealed that Labradors have never won either, I don't think, the best in show.
Hmm.
Maybe once a long time ago, but we boycott the show every year now.
4 and 5 most popular, 4th and 5th most popular types of dogs in America are now the Bulldogs. French Bulldogs are 4, and regular Bulldogs are 5.
Well, are they regular or are they English?
Whatever. They're frankly a mistake. God bless your dogs. I'm happy for them. But I look at some of those bulldogs and I just think, well, that wasn't a good idea. Then beagle. I got nothing but love for dogs. And if that's your dog, I'm sorry. You don't like that. And I want to take
you
it
are
back.
Not a dog.
Well, I got a wiener dog. I got right. Daisy, the Dizzy Dapple Dachshund, which is number 12. I'll finish the list. So you go bulldogs 4 and 5, beagles, poodles, Rottweilers. German pointers, the German short hair pointers, Yorkshire Terriers, Boxers, and then Dachshunds and Corgis. Round out your top 13 there.
My dog can make the list.
What kind you got, Dave?
Well, kind of a Shih Tzu.
Gesundheit. Shih Tzus are number 20 on the list.
That's got to work harder.
Mary, you got something around the house you want me to look up for you here? Most popular dog breeds in the world? Mutt may be number 1 now that
you
mention
it,
but not according to the AKC. Those aren't the purebreds. It's 9:27 into the newsroom. We'll get you updated on WGN Radio News in a couple minutes. I did it again. Dun, 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 dun. That's the news sounder, but actually I don't have to hit it right now, so I can just continue to go through my list here, which is just fine. Huskies, Shepherd. You know what we had at my house when I was a kid? Were the Shetland sheepdogs, the toy collies. And those look like little baby lassies running around.
Yeah.
Those are good, yippy, high-strung, smart dogs. You will end up doing their taxes for them. If you get a Shetland, they will run. Of course, I guess all the dogs do, right? If you have a dog, pretty much you're living in that dog's house. It certainly is that way with dachshunds. Wiener dogs are small and in charge. But I saw this, and here's here's what I think is unfair about it. The bigger dogs with the more hair have more to show. A small dog with short hair, like Daisy, the Dizzy Dapple Dachshund, they're down there. And they, you know, when these dogs come and they're so manicured, you know, they look like Edward Scissorhands was working on them for a while. They look like, what is it, topiary or something? They look like shrubs. They're all flouncy. Well, it would seem to me like they have almost an advantage that other kinds of dogs just don't have. Bulldogs, though, to me, are everywhere. I'm seeing more bulldogs now than I ever have. I think that bulldogs are a very popular school mascot, too.
Yeah, Georgia. Let's think of some UConn? Other bulldogs. Butler Bulldogs.
Butler Bulldogs, thank you for that.
I think Fresno State, maybe.
Yeah. San Diego State is the... they're not the Bulldogs, but I think they have a funny mascot or nickname. They're not the Armadillos, are they? Or is that... Dave, I'm looking at you like you should have memorized every college mascot
in
America.
Well, I just wonder if you're thinking of they're the Aztecs at San Diego State.
Uh-huh.
But I'm thinking you might be thinking about the banana slugs.
That's good. That's good. Anyway, congratulations to Seba, the standard poodle who won Best in Show at the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, the 144th. By the way, a couple of texts have poured in after Steve Grzanich used the words, squishy ear, I believe.
Squishy ear, yes.
John, this is so weird. My left ear has been feeling poppy and muffly for the last month.
Yep, that's it.
It's bothering me, but it's nice to know someone else is having a similar problem. I hope yours goes away, Steve Grzanich. Thank you for sharing. Signed, Mary.
Well, thank you very much for that. Hopefully it will. The doctor decided not to treat it, just to let it be because it's not infected or anything. So, and he says it's just as soon as it dries out, it will go away.
Somebody else said, oh, my God, I have been having squishy ear, too, and I never went swimming. Yep. And 847 said, my dog had a total blowout of his coat. That doesn't happen most Januaries or Februaries, but this squishy ear season, it's crazy.
And that's a medical term too, John, because it's the same thing my doctor said. It's the actual term my doctor...
Squishy ear.
Squishy ear.
And that's because of the moisture in the air, because it just hasn't been that cold.
That's what he said, yes.
This was from yesterday's show. The word is spelled COXSWAIN in the fake resume that her parents put together for her to get into USC. And that's the person I think that says stroke. Under skill set, it says awareness, organization, direction, and steering. I could do awareness, organization. Actually, I couldn't do that.
When could you have ever done awareness?
Okay, I'm going to go on to number three then. Direction. I could say, hey. On a street team. I love Meryl Streep. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Yesterday we were talking about the Lori Loughlin daughters and the fact that we were able to see what their resume looked like. That word that she said she should have a scholarship for, evidently got one, is spelled COXSWAIN. And that's pronounced coxswain. I was saying coxswain. I didn't know. BOATSWAIN. It looks like boatswain is bosun. Those of you that I guess know your nautical stuff or just stuff may have known that. And thank you for correcting me. And
I didn't want to correct you on the air, John.
Filling me in. I had no idea. It's one of those words that you've seen before, but you really don't fully you don't know how to pronounce it. You see it, but you don't often hear it. At least I sure hadn't. The word Q-U-A-Y, which I think is where the boats go sometimes, into a Q-U-A-Y is pronounced key. Well, I would have been K or Quay all day on that, but that's key. By the way, so we're following the Jussie Smollett story. Everybody just, you know, breathe in and breathe out. And we'll get through the latest wrinkle in this unending saga. But one funny thing is the Dave Chappelle piece, right? So did you guys hear the Dave Chappelle story about this? I mean, this happened. When did this drop the first time, Elle? If it was like... Several months ago. But obviously between now and last February. And Dave Chappelle was doing one of his comedy specials, and in it, he talked about Jussie Smollett in Chicago and how the cops handled this. And it's such an interesting perspective, because we all come to the story with our own filter, our own angle on it. And Chappelle was looking at it, among other things, as a black man. And it's a largely black crowd that's in front of him. And for some reason, just because he wants to be so derisive of Jussie Smollett, he calls him Juicy Smollier and makes fun of everything about him. And they are all on page with Chappelle.
Oh, it was a crazy story. Apparently, when he was walking down the street late at night, two white men came out of the shadows with MAGA hats on, beat him up. Tied a rope around his neck, called him all kinds of, and put some bleach on him and ran off into the night. It was like international news. And everybody was furious, especially in Hollywood. It's all over everybody's Twitter feed and Instagram page. Justice for Juicy and all that. The whole country was up in arms. It was talking about it all the time on the news. And for some reason, African Americans, we were like oddly quiet. We were so quiet about it that the gay community started accusing African American community of being homophobic for not supporting him. What they didn't understand is that we were supporting him with our silence. Because we understood that this was clearly lying. None of these details added up at all. He said he's walking down the street in Chicago and white dudes come up to him and say, "Hey, man, aren't you that from Empire?" Does that sound like how white people talk? I know white people. They don't talk like that. Are you from Empire? They would never say that. It sounds like something that I would say. If you're a racist and homophobic, you're not even gonna know who this is. You can't watch Empire. Black people never feel sorry for the police, but this time we even felt sorry for the police. Can you imagine if you was a police veteran taking this kid's police report? Okay, Mr. Smollett, please tell me what happened. All right. 2 a.m. We left the house at 2 a.m. It's minus 16 degrees. You were walking. You were walking. All right. And where were you going? Subway. Sandwiches?
And it goes. Chappelle on Juicy Smollett. Cars.com is based in Chicago. Did you know that? I didn't until just recently. So the auto show's in town. And we had on the air the other day this guy named Joe Weisenfelder, who's the executive editor of Cars.com. And he was not able to tell us what the car of the year is going to be from that website until they got into the show. So last night, I guess they made the announcement. And Joe said he'd come back into our studio to visit with us. Hi, Joe. Welcome back.
Hello.
Am I correct in saying what I said?
You are 100% correct.
Will I recognize the name of the car?
You might. You'll know the brand. It is the 2020 Hyundai Palisade.
Hyundai Palisade.
It's a new model. And for this award, we consider fully redesigned and all new models. And the Palisade is an all new model. It's one of those big SUVs with three rows of seats. And people are more familiar with its twin from Kia, which is the Telluride. And it's largely because the Telluride has been advertised way more, like in last year's Super Bowl and all that. So it's gotten more attention, but they're very similar. And it was also a nominee for our award.
Why do you like this so much?
It carries a lot of the positives of Hyundai's, which is they give you an awful lot for the money, but it takes it to a level that we haven't even seen before. It's just extremely, actually, we'll call it luxurious in high trim levels. In addition to being very well-rounded overall.
But also value, you think it's a good price point?
That is the key. I mean, it starts at just above $30,000, and even loaded with all of the factory options, we're talking about $47,500 with destination. And it's great for families. It's just high quality. It has all of the latest tech. It really just ran away with it.
Hyundai Palisade?
Palisade, yes.
Singular Palisade, the Hyundai Palisade.
Yeah.
Where are these made, by the way? Do you know?
The Palisade is actually made overseas, possibly in South Korea. The Telluride, on the other hand, even though they're similar and a similar platform, is made in the U.S. And for people who care about that, that might be one reason to go for one over the other. And we were actually very upfront about that in our award announcement, which is they are so close that it was tough. It was a very close decision, as it was in our seven-model comparison test that helped inform our decision. I mean, all of these decisions come from our testing. And to give you an idea of how close they were, out of a possible 650 points in our regimented testing, the difference between the Palisade and the Telluride was about 5 points.
So almost co-winners.
It could go either way.
And
it
if Made in America
like.
Is a factor for you, then go with the Telluride. You know, although I'm still not clear on what's the best choice for an American to make for America. Should I buy an American label made overseas or a Hyundai, say a Korean label that's made in the United States? Because it would seem to me like while a Hyundai made in the United States guarantees American jobs, it sends the profits to another country. Maybe it would be better to buy a Honda made in Japan and then buy a Chevy made overseas or in Mexico, say,
right,
and then the profits come back here.
You might be asking the right person. I'm not sure the answer is going to satisfy you, but for about as long as we've been doing the awards program, I think it's about 12 years, we've had something called the American Made Index, which is a highlight. We don't do every vehicle, but we highlight the top 10 or 15 vehicles that are the most American-made, and that's what we attempt to look at, which is not just what is the brand, because of exactly what you said. It can be built here and have a name like Honda and use mostly North American parts and North American or U.S. labor, usually U.S. labor, whereas you could look at something from Buick that's built in China with like 3% North American parts. This is what we wanted to get people's attention on, because everyone seems to know where a brand is from, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's where the work is being done and where the parts are coming from. So yes, intellectual property and profits might go overseas, but where's the work being done? It all depends on what you care about.
What you value.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have you back in the studio. You have to visit with us more often here. But so the Car of the Year from Cars.com, announced at the auto show here in Chicago last night, is the Hyundai Palisade. And the Telluride is right behind it in the points total.
In the points total for the seven-model challenge of all those three-row SUVs, we also had other vehicles that we considered for the award of different types. We had like the hybrid version of the Toyota Corolla, which gets an amazing 50-plus miles per gallon.
You like that one.
For about $25,000. Pretty good price. We had the Kia Soul, BMW X7. I mean, it's a mix of different vehicles. And the reason I emphasize that test is, I mean, you can't take these dissimilar products and really put them up against each other head-to-head. It's really more about how well they do versus their competitors as opposed to against each other.
Find them at cars.com, CARS.com. Joe Weisenfelder, you can get the full list there. Visit with us again, Joe, but thanks for coming into our studio.
Glad to be here.
Well done. Maybe I was just channeling Daisy the Dizzy Dappled Dachshund when I started to make fun of all of those fancy dogs that win the Westminster Kennel Dog Show. They had the 144th annual of it, the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, and the winner was the Fifi the Poodle. And it was a really, poodly-looking dog, and I'm real happy for it. But some of you don't like some of the things I said about your breeds. John, you are going to dog hell, say a couple of you. Oh, I hope not. But I do want to say this about what Steve Grzanich mentioned, because it's not been super cold. It's been warmer. It's been more humid this January and February, and some people are, as a result, coming down with moisture-related ear problems like swimmers get.
That was a very sensitive information Steve was discussing, I think.
Normally we don't discuss our private medical histories here, but Steve was coming forward with a squishy ear case, which I thought, A, sounds really bad, and B, isn't a real thing. He said, no, that's what the doctor calls it. 847, hey, I'm with Steve Grzanich. I'm having the same issues with my left ear. Sinus, dizzy. Doctor says it's weather-related. Lots of patients are going through this with the same thing. Oh, my God, John, you're freaking me out about squishy ear. I actually just bought earwax remover over the weekend. Glad I'm not alone.
That sounds so gross.
It does. Well, yeah, the little moisture gets in there. I guess that's what happens, but that's just the way it is with the weather. A lot of you are talking to me about the active shooter drills that your kids go through. There's a story in the Tribune today which describes some of them, and according to the founder of a gun violence prevention group called Moms Demand Action, these are people that don't want violence in the schools and presumably would endorse active shooter drills. The woman says that the drills are becoming more perverse and obscene, hiring strangers to wear masks and rattle the doors of classrooms without letting the students or even faculty know, shooting teachers with rubber bullets, students with fake blood lying in the hallway, being asked to play the role of victims. All of these things have caused us over the years to look at lockdown drills differently. No kidding. I can't imagine they're actually doing anything like that. To me, and many of you have said this to me via text today, when they did hydrogen and atomic bomb testing in the 50s and 60s, they didn't blow up the schoolyard so that you'd know what it was like. They just said, in the event of that, we'll get under our desks, we'll be safe there. In the event of tornado drills and fire drills, which pretty much everybody's gone through, they don't set something on fire or mimic a tornado. They say, well, no, if a tornado's coming and the siren's going, and here's what we'll do. Now, maybe what it's actually like when the active shooter is in the school is different than a tornado or an atomic bomb or a fire outside the school. Yeah, some of those could be inside the school, too.
I know a teacher who, the students weren't present, but they underwent a traumatic drill and were not given warning.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah. You can sort of see how this stuff develops. I mean, you know, the police want to be more and more prepared and become more and more realistic, and it just kind of takes on a life of its own. It makes perfect sense to me. I can understand that.
It makes perfect sense to you that people are reacting to how severe these are.
That it's starting to get a little too real.
Getting out of hand.
Yeah.
John, as for active shooter drills, those are way less scary than when we had to hide under our desks waiting for an impending nuclear bomb attack in the 50s and 60s. I don't know. Were those scary?
True.
I don't know. I mean, it was a scary scenario. I guess they're all awful. A shooter in the building, an atomic bomb just blew up outside. You have to chuckle because I don't think that the idea that you'd get under the desk was going to do you much good.
Well, I think it probably was traumatic for young students at that time, but there weren't nuclear bombs going off, and there are school shootings happening.
Yeah.
So if you're not aware...
That's a good point.
And you're not told it's a drill, it could be scary as hell.
Right, but also, if you don't do something, you got to do something, because really, only twice have atomic bombs been dropped on populations. But shooters do get into public places all of the time, so you got to do something. You can't just say, "Oh, it's not going to happen." You've got to prepare the faculty, students, and staff for something. But how do you do that? What do you do? John, active shooter drills should be realistic, say some of you, and others of you say these are defeating the purpose. I don't know what a psychiatrist involved in these drills would say, but a couple of you have asked me to query our audience and say, if you're a sociologist, psychologist, psychiatrist, anything with ist at the end, what would you say about this? Is this, do they go too far? Hey, John, I grew up with A-bomb drills and tornado drills. I don't think it affected us in the long run. To the active shooter drills, they're part of the times we live in. I think a couple teachers or faculty members are saying, welcome to Education 2020. This is what we got to do, too. Yeah, I don't envy you for that. John, I have it in my left ear. A lot of people have squishy ear. We'll round up a doctor to talk a little bit about that, just briefly, maybe tomorrow on the show. Fran wanted to say something. Hi, Fran. You're on WGN. How are you?
Okay. Well, I'm 83. And, you know, you had to have lived through that time when they were putting out atomic bombs, and you knew if one hit, you all were going to die. Not just a case, you know. I mean, it was a scary, scary time. So don't dismiss it as if it's not as important as, sure, the school shootings are terrible. And I get that, but you just have to have known that back in the day when that was happening, it truly, truly was scary. And we just knew for sure. We all lived on pins and needles at the time. It was awful.
That is lost on us today. I don't think we have a, if that's how people generally felt, I don't think we have any appreciation for it. All we think about is how ridiculous the idea was of getting under your desk, because that wasn't going to do you any good.
And, you know, but at the time, they, you know, there was really nothing else to do.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, the thing is, we all lived in an era, in the time when atomic bombs in Russia, it was just, you didn't know if you were going to live till tomorrow. I mean, it really was scary. It's hard to appreciate that now. And, of course, getting under the desk was a stupid thing. But, you know what, at the time, there was nothing else going on, you know, where they could take, no one had any sense of anything different than that, but it really was a scary, scary time. And I mean, God knows I would hate to have, you know, be in school now or have younger kids in school, have grandchildren that I worry about in schools with the shootings. This is crazy time as well, but don't dismiss the days when you hadn't lived through it. It really was awful. Because we didn't know any better. You know,
yeah.
That's all I really wanted to say, was that it was a scary time. And, you know, with the Cold War and everything else, you just never knew from minute to minute what was going to happen.
That's a really good call, Fran. Thanks for taking us back. I'm glad you joined us.
Okay, thank you too. Love you.
Have a good day. It's 10:18. Fran tooling around and recollecting that. It's funny now because, A, the USSR isn't even a country anymore, and I'm not exactly sure where we are with the Russians. We don't like them. We don't trust them. They manipulate our elections. They're on the wrong side on a lot of international issues. Our president and their president seem to have worked out a personal allegiance or understanding. I don't fear an atomic attack like I used to. I mean, as a kid, you know, I was born in 1959. Growing up, I knew that was a possibility, and the doomsday clock sort of scared you how close we are to nuclear annihilation. And in fact, the people in Chicago just reset it closer than it's ever been, but not for that reason. Times have changed. Robert's online, too. Hey, Robert, you're on WGN. Jump in there, Robert. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call, man. In my eyes, if something like that was experienced in my daughter's school, she's 5 years old and she's in kindergarten, and there was to do such a drill without anybody knowing, I would be highly upset. Like, I would be enraged, because I think that can be so traumatizing to a child, you know, at that age, that cannot tell the difference of reality versus an act. And if they're going as far as blood and the actual shooting and shooting teachers and all that, that's the best that we can do as a country for our school, is that, mind you, nothing about guns. Let's go ahead and dramatize our kids with this whole scenario, with this realistic scenario. And I know they talked about back in the 50s, but there was nobody throwing bombs outside of school, making it so realistic what it would drive you insane. Yeah, the talk was there, and you kind of have a thought in your mind of fear, but going to this extent, no. I would really love to hear a psychiatrist in their opinion, yeah, and what they, yeah, think in this, and kids experience such a traumatic scenario like that. That is extremely traumatic.
Right, because the kid thinks it's real, and then you come up to them later and say it wasn't real. I don't know that that erases what's already happened. In their brain, it was real.
Yeah, how do you calm them down from such a dramatic scene like that? They're going to be so confused, and it's going to, I think it would, it would be very detrimental to their whole teaching or learning, for that matter, you know, and learning, because they're going to have that so embedded in their brain to think that at any given time something this might just happen. So how are they supposed to even concentrate? Some kids have a hard time concentrating as it is at such an age, you know. And I think this country's got to do better. It's got to do better with our schools. This country is so addicted to guns. It is high addiction with guns, and let's give teachers guns. And it's just, Lord have mercy, it's got to stop somewhere. But doing this, I would be, they would hear me, and I would be very loud about
you'd
it.
You'd be on the phone. I get the feeling you know how to work the phone. I appreciate your phone call, Robert.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good day. I'm glad you're listening. Just one more call on this. By the way, Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune, said he put the word out to his restaurant contacts. Phil Vitale did. He said, if you can save some tables for me, I'll announce them on WGN Radio for Valentine's Day. So if you are like, I'd still like to go out, but I don't think I can get a table or one at a good time, you can if you're listening at 10:35. Bob, you organize some of these school drills, is that right?
Yes. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, I got a minute. Jump on there. What do you want to say?
Okay, when Columbine first happened, schools were inundated subsequent to that to do something about protecting our kids. And so these lockdown drills and active shooter drills became kind of the norm in public schools. What we've learned in the years is kids are traumatized, as your previous caller said, when these drills happen. Even when we used to at one time announce them, inevitably parents would call, say, my son or daughter came home, you know, scared because of that whole piece. There is a difference between practicing a lockdown that many schools do and the active shooter. I will tell you, after experiencing several active shooter drills in schools, when those guns go off in a school, there is nothing like it. And no matter how much training people go through, that angst is palatable. Even police officers who come in and do.
But are you saying that as a result, these drills are a good idea?
I don't think that when you bring an active shooter and shoot guns off in school with kids, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought you were going to. Bob, I'm out of time. I'm glad you called. Yesterday, our news click, the Daily Web Poll question said an Oak Park lawmaker proposed that attendants must pump your gas beginning in 2021. 94% of you said that's a bad idea. 6% of you said that's a good idea. I think I'm reading that right, Elle, if you've got those switched around. But 94% said changing the law to make it so you can't pump your own gas, that's a bad idea. But that conversation led us to what you can and can't do it at the gas station. Like, can you leave your car running while you're pumping your gas?
Blah, blah, blah.
And Bertrand was like, I don't care. Yeah, I leave my car running.
I was not, I don't care. It just never occurred to me that was something that you were not supposed to do.
The reason I was told that you shouldn't leave your car running isn't because it's going to explode or catch fire.
Okay.
It was because what's going to happen to you is what happened to Mark Carman, who joins us in the studio.
Hey, John, how are you?
Say hello to Steve Bertrand.
Hi, Steve, how are you?
I'm about to be worse.
Be his cautionary tale.
Well, I think Steve knows the story, but maybe he doesn't. It was Thanksgiving night. Two Thanksgivings ago, I want to say, John, and I was on my way to hosting WGN Radio, the overnight show.
Yeah.
And I was going to get a little nap beforehand. It was like 9 o'clock. We just had a beautiful dinner in the suburbs. So I stopped to get gas, is what you do when you live in the city, when you're in the suburbs. You got to fill up in the suburbs, yep. better value. And, you know, I wanted to go in and get myself a tea, make things warm up the throat. I got the big show, the whole thing. So I run in. I leave my car on, the pump's going, the whole thing.
What time is this?
This is 9 o'clock at night on Thanksgiving night.
Where?
In Highland Park, Illinois.
Keep going.
I run in, I get my tea, I run out, and there is the pump on the ground, and the car is gone, and it's... I literally walked all the way up to the pump, stared at it on the ground.
Like, maybe it's around here somewhere, my whole car.
I left my car here somewhere.
This cannot be. And people, they were trolling around looking for exactly that scenario.
Really?
Jumped in the car. I got it back the next day. Many, many dents. a sweet Bulls hat, some leftover, now legal, wacky tobacco, and that was a nightmare. There was a guy in there who saw it happen. He drove me downtown. But the point is this. I trust people, John.
I do, too.
That's how I live my life.
I do, too.
What's the chance that some lunatic...
It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
And it was Thanksgiving.
And it was Thanksgiving. But I got to say, overall, I got more attention from that car theft that 2 years later you're still getting a text. It made for some great radio. So overall, I still would sign up for the experience because it was a learning thing. And to be honest, John, I still, like even last Sunday night, I'm going to pick up Chinese food on my way home.
No.
No, I don't want to turn off my car.
Why?
Because it's
people treat that like it's a crank car.
Your Honor, if I may interject here.
Yes, Bertrand.
If the reason that we are told that we cannot leave our cars running at the gas station is because they might be susceptible to theft, then there should be the same law for Chinese restaurants. Right? Am I right? I
mean, no, you're not.
What? Why not?
I don't understand your logic there.
Well, you're saying that the reason you can't leave your car running at a gas station is because it could be stolen. If that's the reason for the law, then that should apply to the Chinese restaurant as well, or to the convenience store.
No, I mean, this makes no sense. Your car is not vulnerable to theft if you go into a restaurant. Your car is vulnerable to theft if you leave it running.
No, he just said he left his car running when he went in to pick up Chinese food.
Right.
Okay, that's the same thing as going in to pay for your gas or buy a soda. So why isn't that illegal? You're not picking up on that line?
I think that actually makes great sense. I'm with Bertrand.
I'm so glad you're here again.
Okay.
Never can leave your car running. It's illegal. No, we might as well just get rid of blinkers. I mean, in this city, too.
What planet are you guys on? All right, let's do this. Will you just stay here one more minute?
I would love to.
Take all the time you need, Mark.
Phil Vitel, the restaurant critic at the Tribune, is going to jump in that seat. But as we segue from you to him, I just have a question about what the financial considerations were for you as a result of that. It's 10:33. Good morning to you. This is John Williams. Phil Vitel, restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune, joins us Wednesdays at this time. Phil's in the studio. Hi, Phil. How are you?
I'm good, John.
We asked you to come up with some restaurants people could still get reservations in. You have a list.
I do.
And this has made you very popular. Our friend Mark Carmen, who you just met over here, was just finishing a story about how his car got stolen because he left it running. Imagine that. So then, because Mark doesn't evidently... What's the word I'm thinking of? Learn.
Well said, John.
He leaves it running at a Chinese restaurant when he goes in to get Chinese food.
Oh, for just running, get take out, come right back.
I'm very, very stubborn, John. I'm not changing my life just because of one bad experience.
Totally agree with you. For instance, I don't lock my office door. I leave my phone charger laying around.
And people are right.
And people stole my phone charger. But I still do that. And I defer to people's better graces. I'm like you. But I never leave my car running. For one thing, it just seems wasteful. And in your case, it could go bad. Somebody stole your car Thanksgiving night.
See, I actually think it's wasteful to turn it off because then you got to go through the whole turning it on. That's more energy to turn it on. I think I'm actually saving myself a couple of pennies in the world something by leaving it running.
We're going to have to get a specialist on that. I do know that starting a car cold burns more gas immediately than it does idling for the same amount of time. But I'm not sure that that's...
Well, there's got to be a point at which it's not a good idea. So the trick is knowing how long that is.
How long?
You're going to go in, take a shower, you know, have a little bite to eat. Terrible idea. You're wasting gas.
Well, how many times do you see service vehicles, ComEd or whatever, and they're just idling out front? Bus drivers, when they take their break near me on Halstead, will just leave their bus sit there idling.
I can explain
and
that.
And then they go, what's the explanation for
that? They're not paying for the gas.
I think that's terrible form. So you went into the Chinese restaurant. Your vehicle did not get stolen when you got to Chinese.
It did not. But the thing is that it's a bad decision because I'm nervous for that 1 minute that I'm walking and I'm looking back behind me. Just turn the car off, Carm. It's okay. Turn the car off. It's way easier. There's no risk then.
A little bit of that.
Right. So I'm evolving here.
Say goodbye to your innocence.
But I do. Right. But I really do want to reiterate that you and I do come from a similar place and that we hate to assume the worst about people and we'll make ourselves vulnerable so as to exercise our faith in mankind. So we will leave our car running. We will do things that other people would say, you better not do that, but you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, and I, if we're going full transparency, there's plenty of times where I do turn it off and I don't trust humanity and I'm going to...
Well, be smart about it.
Be smart about it, right.
Okay, so what, when your car got stolen two Thanksgivings ago, Thanksgiving evening, at Highland Park, yeah, at a gas station.
With my phone in there, you feel like you're not even wearing clothes at that point.
You're naked. And fortunately, somebody, though, I thought the, you know, silver lining of the story was somebody saw it happen. And they took care of you.
Yeah, drove me all the way down to the city, the whole thing, and said if you need a witness and all that type of stuff. But that was the other thing I learned, John, that there's no real punishment for that. Like they're not going to put you in jail for it, which is why these things are a little bit more prevalent.
The thief you're talking about?
Yeah, there was no, I mean, like, you show up in court and, okay, bye. They, I mean, there wasn't much.
A Jussie Smollett APB, all points bulletin for you. They right. didn't rush out and find the guy.
I mean, it's just a joyride. They fly down into the right. city and drop it off, and that's it. And there's no real consequence.
At what point does it become Grand Theft Auto? Not
yeah.
the video game.
I'm like, it's the single most expensive thing most people own. If someone steals it, that should be, hey, Kim Fox, go get those people, man. Throw them in jail.
Yeah, and I don't remember what the insurance payout was on this for me, but obviously I have insurance.
I asked you what the consequences were.
I'm assuming it was my deductible, which is either $500 or $1,000.
So you had to take it, so they were able to repair the dents and things like that.
Repair the dents, got it back in, I don't know, 2 weeks, whatever it was.
Do you
good
feel,
as new, although it's not
the car
really...
a little tainted then? It's not your car anymore.
Yeah, it smells funny. Someone's been in my seat.
Exactly. Yeah.
What did friendly Bob Adams say when you told him you left the keys from the car and the car running?
Yeah, that wasn't great. I was worried that I was going to be liable because of it, but it turned out that
who's
I wasn't.
Bob Adams?
Don't remember friendly Bob Adams?
No.
I'm dating myself. Old insurance commercial ran on the radio. I used to sponsor the Cubs. Friendly Bob Adams.
And you're not alone. I remember Bob.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was just rolling with it. I had no idea who Bob was.
Attaboy. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, but so you were out your deductible. The car's repaired to its... Did you get your phone back?
I thought I lost the phone, but it was underneath the seat. I found it like 5 weeks later after I had gotten a new phone, so that phone's ruined. But the other thing, John, which is the most vulnerable part of this, for whatever reason, I had my stuffed animal Arnold in the car, so I was this is an animal that I've had since childhood. I thought I was going to lose the animal. I really didn't even care about the damn car. Just wanted my stuffed animal back, which is really weird, and I shouldn't be bringing that part up.
You should have stopped the story about
that. Yeah,
right.
I would have not put that in there.
But Arnold was okay, man. He was just chilling in the back. It was a big win. The duck was all right.
He wasn't traumatized. He didn't have to.
I think he was. I think he definitely was traumatized. Mm-hmm. But I gave him a big hug, and it was all right after that.
Sounds like you were victimized by some Highland Park thugs who didn't really know what they were doing.
Exactly right, Steve. Those tough Highland Parkers.
Arnold
is a duck.
See, I seem to remember this whole incident because I was working during this whole incident, and Carm was filling in, I think, for Dave Ennett, and he was a wreck over the duck. And the phone. It was the duck and the phone. That was it.
The car, right.
The car, you didn't care.
Producer Ellis said,
there's only one duck.
Ellis in my ear, and she said, why don't you wrap this conversation up? So thank you for coming in, Carm.
Thanks for having me, John.
My best to you. Let's talk a little baseball sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Cubs, Sox, that sort of thing. Phil Rosenthal's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune.
No, he's not. I am.
Say it again, Ellis. What are you saying? Oh, I said Phil Rosenthal.
Good guy.
Phil's supposed to join us in about an hour, but I don't think he's going to be able to. And we will talk Cubs and stuff like that then. But in the meantime, Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune.
Yes, sir.
So were you able to secure some reservations for our listeners?
I didn't secure them. I called a bunch of places. I put out a little bulletin of my own saying, hey, who's got tables at this late date? And there are quite a few. They don't have a lot of tables, but there are still lots of places you can still get into at this late date. I bumped into Bob Surratt in the hallway just now, and he pointed out that with this scary weather coming, you may find some cancellations. And if there's a place you've been dying to get into and they're saying we're full up, get on that wait list because there are going to be some people.
Do they really make the call then on to wait lists?
I assume so. If they have an empty table, they'll be like, call somebody, get that thing filled.
Yeah, no kidding. So what do you like? What have you got on your list?
Well, of course, the first thing I thought of was places that don't accept reservations. Bang. You're no worse than anybody else that shows up at 7 o'clock hoping to get a table. So there's a few places to try there. Purple Pig on Michigan Avenue, 444 North Michigan, doesn't take reservations, has about 125 seats, so you probably won't walk in and sit right down, but you won't have to wait terribly long.
But you said they don't take reservations.
They do not.
So what are you telling me, though, that they say they think they'll have some tables on Valentine's night?
I'm sure they'll fill every table, but what you do if you get there at 7 o'clock or a little earlier or whatever, you'll be however many down on the line, and you'll get in.
Yeah. Give me another place. But I'm sorry, Phil, I'm confused, because I thought these were places where you could still make a reservation.
Oh, okay. I have those too.
Okay, but right now you're offering...
Just mentioning that if you go to a place that doesn't take reservations, like Purple Pig or Longman and Eagle...
Especially on a snowy night, you might get in.
Or the Time Out Market, well, you'll definitely get in. You just have to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
And those will work.
Purple Pig.
Yep. And places that have availability that told me they had availability. Don Juan up in Edison Park, which is despite the kind of silly name, is a very good Mexican restaurant. They're up on Northwest Highway. They've got some tables, and they're doing a little fun menu for Valentine's Day, and that'll be fun.
Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, joins us Wednesdays at this time. He was kind and wise enough to ask the restaurant community, hey, who could still eat at your restaurant on Valentine's night?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Purple Pig, doesn't take reservations. They said they think they'll have some avails.
Right. I had Don Juan. Marquesa, which is a very ornate Frenchy restaurant at 535 North Wells. Their celebration goes Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, tripling your chances to get in. And they're going to have a DJ with some dancing, and they have a room that they call the Champagne Cave, and they'll be showing romantic to however we define romantic movies in the Champagne Cave, so you can make a whole big evening of it. That's a good one. Out west, Craft Urban Kitchen out in Geneva, in the little downtown area there, they're doing a $60 pre-feast menu. $60 and out the door.
That's not bad.
No, and that's and they have availability, they tell me. The Cafe Spiaggia, which is not the big expensive Spiaggia, but the less expensive, just as nice Cafe Spiaggia in the One Mag Mile building, 980 North Michigan Avenue. They have availability. Out in Evanston, Found Kitchen and Social House, Friday only, they're doing a $65 five-course menu, but they have availability on Saturday as well, and that would be the a la carte menu.
I see. And all of these places don't normally take reservations?
All these places take reservations. Oh, they're just not full up.
So you could call right now?
You could call right now. I recommend it right now, or go on whatever online reservation system they're using.
Have I asked you about this? Are the same amount of reservations, are the same tables available on the phone as they are online?
Generally speaking, if it'll either be the same or the phone will have a couple more.
That's what I'm thinking.
Most restaurants, it doesn't mean you can get it, but most restaurants set aside a couple, if they're smart, they set aside a couple table for contingencies, like table 14 is not leaving. They've been here for 3 hours, they're on the 15th cup of coffee, oh my God. So if you build in a little flexibility for things like that, and knowing that you'll always get a few drop-ins no matter what, and you want to be able to take care of them as best you can. So,
should you look at your watch if you're a conscientious diner and figure if I've been there 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
after that I'm taking somebody else's table, or I'm taking money out of this waiter's pocket?
Right. If you've finished your drinking, if you're on that third cup of coffee, you know, yeah. the price of the meal was not a down payment on the table, you know? It's time to take that conversation and that fourth cup of coffee somewhere else.
Lines are my best friends at restaurants, because when I'm done, I think I'm done, and I don't like to linger.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you, Steve.
Mm-hmm. So I'm always the first one, and I try not to be, but I'm always the first one to say, well, let's go.
I am so with you.
And so if there are people standing up waiting to be seated, it's so easy to say, oh, look, these guys are...
Yeah, I'd love to stay here and continue to talk, but look at those poor people over there.
Once I was in a restaurant, very small, and you could tell, my wife and I are dining, and there are people, they're too deep at the bar, they're all milling around, they're hoping that a table will open up. And I called over the owner, who was also the running the floor, the hostess that night, and I said, you know, we were interested in dessert, but if you can get us 2 tables at the bar, we'll eat over there, and then you can have this table back. And I thought she was going to kiss me on the lips. She was just like, yes, hold on just a second.
Yeah.
I had 2 seats at the bar.
Zoom
all over there, and then she got the table back.
And that's kind of fun, maybe, to get a different seat, stretch your legs, go over to the bar, have dessert.
I like eating
there.
At the bar.
It's I
a,
do,
you
too.
Know, if, number one, you wait 3 seconds for a drink refill. That's the first thing. And otherwise, there's someone to talk to. The bartender's chatting. There's someone to your left and right. It's not bad. It's great to dine alone at the bar. I love that.
Brenda and I were out to eat somewhere recently, and the service was so slow. And I mean, we'd sat down, and it was a while before we got our water, and then it was we'd waited a considerable amount of time, and no one had still come by to take a drink order or appetizer. So I don't think they like this, but I just went up to the bar and got the drink and brought it back. And then the waitress finally came around, and she says, "Oh." And I'm like,
don't apologize. You should be super embarrassed.
Well, we all kind of were, but there we were. So anyway, keep going, Phil. What else you got on your list?
Let's see. What else did I mention? Rue, which is the newest and fine dining Indian restaurant. Very cool. 736 West Randolph. They emailed me to say they've got some tables. Le Sud, a French bistro out in Roscoe Village, 2301 West Roscoe. They're doing a $65 four-course menu, or you can order off the regular menu. So that would be a good one. Want some barbecue? Chicago Q at 1160 North Deer Bourne Street, which is probably the nicest in terms of trappings barbecue restaurant.
Yeah, right.
You sit down like, oh, I'm in a real restaurant that just happens to serve barbecue, you know?
The word shack is not in their
name. My cocktail is in a mason jar. This is kind of nice for Valentine's Day. So they're doing a deal with that it's $150 for two, and that includes a bottle of wine. And That is a tough deal to beat.
What's that joint you just mentioned?
Chicago Q, just a letter Q after Chicago.
Where are they located?
1160 North Dearborn, so just south of Division on Dearborn Street.
Got it.
And they're doing well. Let's see, who else told me they had things? Gemini Bistro in Lincoln Park. They're doing a pre-feast menu for $80, and you can add wines for $45 on top of that.
Nice one. $80 per?
That would be per, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if it's for two, I'd jump right in because that's very unusual. If you really like your wine, City Winery out on Randolph Street, they're doing Valentine's Day chocolate wine cognac tasting party from 7 to 9 on Friday. They're also doing a bottomless brunch on Sunday if you want to make that your Valentine's thing.
I wonder how people feel about that. If Valentine is on a Friday night, that's like the perfect storm of slow service. I wonder if everybody's cool with just doing it Saturday, Sunday.
My wife and I have never been too fixated on the actual day, whether we're celebrating a birthday, anniversary, or something like this. It's whatever works. I'm not going to go out and have a big night with, you know, champagne or whatever on a Wednesday just because the calendar tells me to. I'm going to wait till the Friday or go the previous weekend.
Got it. You have any place? Elif said any place south. Yeah, what's the southernmost point on your list?
I did not get a lot of response.
Well,
from
that's
southern.
It. You put out the APB to people to say, hey, what have you got? And it sounds like they're more center and north and northwest on your list.
Yeah, well, that's where most of the restaurants are. Yeah. It could be that the places further south are because they have fewer restaurants per capita. They fill up quicker.
You know, I think that's an untapped area for the food business. I mean, not the McCormick place is always going to be there for you, but you know, I mean, the traffic comes and goes there, and maybe those people have other plans. But the South Loop is developing, and south of the South Loop is developing. And I would say that there's more and more people with restaurant dollars available to restaurateurs down there.
Sure. I my wife and I drove down to Tinley Park a weekend before last to a very nice restaurant called Tin Fish. It's been around for 10 years anyway, maybe longer, and had a very nice meal, and the place was booming. They're doing great business.
I'm anxious for you to try Harbor. I mentioned that to you once upon a time.
Yes.
They do a Manhattan there, and what makes it different is they make their own sweet vermouth for the Manhattan. Because I taste it, I was kind of like trying to get my head around it.
That's above and beyond.
The guy, I know. A lot of people will do their own kind of bourbon. They'll infuse it or smoke it or something. But in this case, they do their own sweet vermouth. It's a nice Manhattan. Give me another one, Phil. Restaurant reservation or otherwise.
Let's see. Coco Pazzo, 300 West Hubbard Street. That's one of Chicago's best Italianos. They're doing, they have tables, but only late. But they also said we're wide open for lunch on Valentine's Day. So if you want to do Valentine's Day lunch.
That's not a bad idea.
There's no rule against it. It counts.
That's a Friday. You could knock off early.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. On the less expensive side, say Stella Barra, Pizzeria and Wine Bar up on Halsted in Lincoln Park. They're celebrating Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with their regular menu plus a lot of specials.
Stella, what's the name of that?
Stella Barra, B-A-R-R-A. Stella Barra. Pizzeria and Wine Bar, which is right next door to the property that is also sister property, which is the Summer House Santa Monica. Despite the name Santa Monica, it's here. It was inspired by that. Full menu available in addition to a bunch of specials, special sparkling rosé available for $20 for two glasses. Fun stuff.
Can we post that list on my website?
I think we can, yes.
You've done all of that homework and we're out of time. What's the one place, if money were no object and availability were not an issue, where would you go?
There's a lot of places I go. I happen to know that Everest Restaurant, there's money no object. They're doing a tasting menu for, like, the short one is $145. That's the early bird one from, get there at 4:30. And then the main multi-course menu is $195 per. And that would be fabulous. And it's Valentine's Day and you're up in the air.
Are they on that list of restaurants?
They are. They still have a few. They still have some. They still have some tables.
Well, those numbers aren't off the rails.
Right. And maybe. I love the free indoor valet parking that they have at
Oh, no
Everest.
Kidding.
Yeah. So not only when you go back down, not only is your car ready, but it's warm because it never got cold. It's been indoors the whole time.
He's warm, too. He's Phil Vitel. Read him at chicagotribune.com/dining. He's also in the print edition, and we'll share some of these locations at WGNradio.com on the John Williams page, too. Okay, Phil, a lot of ground covered today. I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's Phil. Call when you get a chance. We read as many texts as we can, but boy, we get a lot of those. I've just been telling you the story about Global Entry, which is a convenient thing to have if you travel a little bit. We do, so we've been going through it. But the process is so federal government-y that it almost makes you question the, I don't know, efficiency or wisdom of the federal government. Oh, gee, John, no one's ever done that before. But still, so the guy that was standing in the lobby there was asking the woman who's running the joint, he said, well, why is it that I'm trying to get my Global Entry card, I've waited 8 months, and you can't even tell me where we are in the queue? And she just kind of shrugged. She said, that's another agency or office, and I can't tell you how long it's going to take. His family was leaving in a few months. She said, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but somebody came in the other day, and they had only waited a few weeks, and they already got the interview. You've been waiting over 8 months, and you have no hope of even knowing when you'll get yours. He just kind of shrugged and walked away. That's the way they do it. So my wife finally got her interview yesterday, and she sat down with the lady, and the lady said, have you ever been arrested? And Brenda didn't recall ever being handcuffed and marched off somewhere. And the lady was kind of steely-eyed about it and said, are you sure? Felix, did that happen to you? You're on WGN. How are you?
Okay.
Thanks for calling. What did you want to say?
We've been through this process twice. The first time, we both went in together, me and the wife, and it was simple, no problem. But I was guessing that maybe Brenda has a name similar to somebody else that they suspect.
That's what they said. They said, well, somebody with your name has a warrant issued for their arrest, and they're still out there. My wife's name is not that uncommon. So I'm here again. This whole process made me doubt rather than appreciate. I mean, how do they not know one person from the other? She used her Social Security number on one of these forms, but that's what it was. Somebody with the same name or a similar name was on the lam, Felix.
It could be. We went the second time. We went. They asked us where we had been recently. We told them we went on a cruise to Cuba. So that got a little eyebrow raised there. They should say it was just a visit, one day. They're in and out. So.
Yeah. Well, you're on to something there. Thanks for the call, Felix.
All right, bye.
I overthink things anyway. When I was asked the question, have you ever been arrested, I didn't want to give him a snap no, though I've never been arrested. And by the way, being arrested shouldn't keep you from getting a Global Entry card in my world anyway. But I thought if I say, no, of course not, that's what the bad guys say. So I wanted to give him sort of a thorough, innocent assessment of my innocence. So when he said, have you ever been arrested, I paused. And I went, no. Which to me was a thoughtful, really true answer.
Overthought answer.
And then he said, you sound like you're not sure. And I said, no, I'm sure. Which sounded even more like I had been arrested. So then he and I had a question and answer period about my being arrested. I've never been arrested. It's a very intimidating process. It's sort of like when you see the cherries on a squad car behind you and you all of a sudden think, what have I done wrong? What have I done wrong? I don't have any drugs in the car. What do you mean a weapon? I don't have a loaded weapon under the seat. You don't have a loaded, but now you're starting to do that. So my advice to you, if you're going to travel internationally and you want that global entry card, which I've been told is worth all of this, boy, you'd better be patient and you'd better plan ahead. You are not going to get it anytime soon. Meanwhile, the Chicago Tribune's Megan Crapaud, I don't know if this is because she got the short straw or the long straw, continues to cover the Jussie Smollett story. Megan, you're back on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Is this a blessing or a curse?
Oh, well, it's all a matter of perspective. It definitely keeps me very busy. How about that?
I tried to, that's a good answer, and it's a feather in your cap. You're one of the better reporters in town, and I like reading what you guys have been writing about it, but I printed out the summary I was able to find, sort of a timeline, that one of the, that I think's on the Tribune site, and it runs to 12 pages of the, of the Jussie Smollett story, and this thing is really only a year long. It happened last January 29th, I think, or 16th. Was the night of the alleged incident, right?
The 29th, yeah. So barely more than a year. And it's been a lot of twists and turns, as you, I'm sure, can see.
And by the way, not to jump to one conclusion, but I think at the end of the day, we could all decide that none of this is worth it because the six counts that a grand jury returned indictments to Jussie Smollett on are for disturbing the public peace or a public nuisance or something like that, right?
Well, it's disorderly conduct.
Disorderly conduct.
And that's a little misleading. That's a technical term, right? But essentially, the a false police report falls under a disorderly conduct charge in Illinois statute.
Okay.
So it's also accurate to say he was charged with lying to police. It's the same kind of charge as the last indictment about a year ago, but fewer counts, I should say.
Was the last one 16 counts, but it was really 8 times 2?
It was 16 counts, you know, and you can slice that in various ways. I mean, the number is not necessarily the point, I think. It's all going towards the same alleged incident, allegations. The gist of it is that this new grand jury convened by Special Prosecutor Dan Webb came to roughly the same conclusions as the Cook County grand jury did last year and returned a very similar indictment.
And so what this is all about, I mean, and there's a lot of tentacles to this. I mean, if you said who should really be worried, you might say Kim Fox, or you might say somebody else, the police, whomever. But Jussie Smollett is still in the crosshairs, and he filed a suit against the city. But now here's Dan Webb, the special prosecutor, and there are 6 counts of disorderly conduct, and I guess that includes lying to the police. You're not supposed to do that. We should take that seriously, but boy, it seems to me like this is a lot of time, money, and effort spent on something that's really not ever going to net a very big fish. Okay, so what happens next then, Megan?
Well, Smollett is due back in court. The same place he was going through all of the same sort of issues last year, the Lighton Criminal Court building at 26 in California. He is due back for judge assignment and arraignment on February 24th. He has moved from Chicago quite a while back. I believe he lives out of state, California. But Dan Webb's team has made arrangements with his attorneys for him to show up in court February 24th, and this whole thing starts over with a different set of prosecutors.
Megan Crapaud, Cook County Criminal Courts reporter for the Chicago Tribune, on a phone line. Steve, what are you thinking when you hear this?
Well, and then you've got Kim Fox running for re-election, and her campaign put out a pretty strong statement yesterday comparing this to a Comey-like drop, referring to the FBI director, James Comey. I'm assuming saying just before the November election that he was reopening the Clinton email investigation, right? So the parallel is that Webb didn't really exonerate Kim Fox in this and said they're still looking at that. What's the disposition of the Fox situation?
So that investigation is still pending. As I'm sure you recall from last year when the special prosecutor was ordered, that special prosecutor had a very broad mandate, not only to determine whether Smollett should be charged again, but also to look into the conduct of basically any office that ever touched this situation,
right,
including Kim Fox's. So the probe of that office is still ongoing. Dan Webb in his press release yesterday was very clear to say that just because Smollett has been charged, that in and of itself is not proof of any wrongdoing on Fox's behalf or on behalf of the office. However, he was very specific also in saying that they disagree with how her office handled that.
And did they say they're still looking into that part of it?
Yes, that right. aspect of it is still pending.
Okay, and then she says, okay, but now this hangs over the election, and you dropping this doubtful bombshell. In fact, you say charges, six counts should go forward, when in fact her office dismissed all of this. So that looks bad for her, and that's what's Webb to do? Wait until after the election before he says anything even about Jussie Smollett? I think it would have been wise for her to keep her mouth shut about all of this.
You know, ultimately, Dan Webb's job is to be a prosecutor, right? And once their team felt they had enough for charges, I'm not sure that it would have been appropriate for them to just sit on it. So he was in a weird spot here, right? If you sit on it until after the election, then that brings you to certain conclusions, right? That looks bad publicly. But you do open yourself up to allegations of trying to mess with the election if you bring the charges beforehand. And that's exactly what Fox's campaign put out yesterday, accusing the timing of being strictly political.
Last question, Megan Capo. What's the worst case for Jussie Smollett here? Could he go to jail? And if so, for how long?
He could go to jail. This is a class 4 felony, which I believe only carries 1 to 3 years in jail. But look, I mean, realistically speaking, it wasn't a violent offense. He doesn't really have much in the way of background. I don't know that anyone thought he was genuinely in danger of actual prison time here. It's also probationable. He would be eligible, I believe, for a formal deferred prosecution program, which is where you keep your nose clean for a year and show up in court, and then the charges are dropped. Worst case, go to trial or get convicted, and it's 3 years. But I don't see that actually happening here.
Megan Capo is the Cook County Criminal Courts reporter, Chicago Tribune. You can read her online and in print if you do not already. Today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper like the Tribune.
I agree.
Nice to talk to you, Megan. Keep doing the good work you guys do over there.
Thanks very much for having me.
I think I can do this in 70 seconds. This is a summary of the Jussie Smollett story, in case you just are trying to keep track of it. We just visited with Megan Capo, the writer, who is telling us about what's happened of late. But if you wanted the backstory and you're new to this, it goes like this. TV star, activist, rapper Jussie Smollett said he was attacked last January 29th at 2 a.m. when it was super cold downtown by two racist homophobic men wearing MAGA hats who punched him, poured bleach on him, and then put a noose around his neck, which was still conveniently around his neck when the cops arrived. The whole world was like, oh my God, 50,000 Chicago cops go to work on this. But Jussie doesn't hand over his phone because, you know, he's a victim. Then on Valentine's Day, cops arrest two people of interest, brothers from Nigeria, extras on Smollett's show Empire. Guess what they had at their home? A red hat and bleach. Aha. Hey, said a caller to my show, do you have a red hat and bleach at your home? Okay, good point. Jussie goes on, Good Morning America, and cries. Everyone cries. The police are still on Team Jussie publicly, but by February 17th, police have let the brothers go, and they want to talk to Jussie. He's now a suspect for filing a false report. The rapper 50 Cent calls Jussie a liar, so there's that. And the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, says Jussie set the whole thing up to help his career. And you're like, how's that working out for you, Jussie? Fox Entertainment issues a statement saying about Jussie's being on their show, we're considering our options, which is what pirates say when they have a sword in your back and you're standing on a plank. The brothers lawyer up and say that they're really sorry for their role in the hoax. March 14th, Jussie pleads not guilty to 16 counts of disorderly conduct. It's really 8, but the Chicago authorities are so angry at him, they voted twice. 12 days later, miraculously for Jussie, crazily for everyone else, all charges are dropped. His lawyers say he was a victim, made to appear as a perpetrator. Hearing about this for the first time, Eddie Johnson is like, wait, what? Who? Mayor Rahm Emanuel can't believe it either. Even the prosecutor on the case, who is not Kim Fox, says he thinks Jussie's guilty. But since Jussie forfeited $10,000 bond and did pretend community service, justice has been served. Now Chicago's really ticked. It wants Jussie to pay $130,000 it spent to cover the case. The brothers also sued Jussie for damaging their reputations, which may be true, but it's also hard to prove for people who don't have reputations. Special Prosecutor Dan Webb is assigned to the case. Yesterday, a grand jury indicted Smollett on 6 counts of disorderly conduct, making this the most celebrated case of disorderly conduct in U.S. history. Here's what I'm wondering today. How close are the Cubs to getting a deal with Sinclair and that marquee network? Are the Cubs going to be on TV when the first pitch is thrown, either for the preseason, you know, spring training games, or the regular season? Nobody's been following this closer than Phil Rosenthal, the reporter in the Tribune, and he, I think, just deplaned from somewhere. Hey, Phil, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm just catching my breath from that Jussie Smollett rundown. My gosh.
All that happened.
That should be a pay-per-view channel right there.
I wonder what the upcharge would that be. $5 a month? $10 a month?
I don't know. You know, I guess it depends on what happens next. But, you know, it's a classic serial. But anyway, yes, I just got off a plane. I was in... Well, you know this. Every 4 years, my friends and I go to New Hampshire to go see as many politicians as we can. It's sort of our version of, you know how businessmen go to spring training for their fun? We go to the real world. This is the equivalent we found.
So that's what you think that was?
I got hung up there. We were fogged in yesterday, so I had to fly in this morning.
So, Phil, that's what you think the real world is, the campaign in New Hampshire?
Well, politics, sure.
Well, maybe a little more serious, but I've heard people say, really? So why does New Hampshire get to set the tone for the other 48 states? I mean, Iowa, New Hampshire...
You know what? They don't. They don't. But what New Hampshire does, and this is one of the reasons we go there, honestly, and this is very far from the Cubs and all, but the reason it's a small state is useful is you can see everybody in a very small space of time. A bigger state, you're going to end up communicating with everybody just through television and radio. And here they actually they come in contact with actual voters, and it changes the way that they have to campaign. And it keeps someone who doesn't have a lot of money in to run. It enables them to be in contention and be heard. So, you do see people fall out. If they can't score in this environment, then they're certainly going to have trouble where they buy a lot of their ad time. But for someone who's coming from perhaps nowhere, it is an opportunity to have a more level playing field. So that it has less to do with the demographics, and perhaps that's an issue. You know, that's obviously an issue going forward, but it is a fascinating exercise in retail politics that probably isn't going to last, you know, forever, because it just seems like the trend isn't going that way.
And are the headlines Biden and Warren did poorly, Yang dropped out, and Klobuchar moved up? Are those the big points of this one?
Well, look, you read the papers as much as I do in terms of the headlines, and as I say, I'm going as a civilian. Obviously, Sanders winning is an interesting aspect to it, Buttigieg being second. I think the big story in terms of trends was that Klobuchar pushed to a strong third, and that was not necessarily something that had been expected coming in, say, a week ago when she didn't do as well in her neighboring state of Iowa. That said, it was kind of fascinating. I mean, it's an interesting, as I say, you can sort of feel it. Biden is a very different candidate. You know, he gives a speech, and that's one thing, but then he does this thing where he talks to everybody on an individual basis, and he seems to really enjoy that, I think, more than the actual campaigning. The interaction with people on a one-to-one basis. And that's, again, something you don't get in other states. But, it wasn't just Democrats we saw. We went and saw Bill Weld, who's sort of tilting at windmills, but interesting nevertheless.
Yeah.
We did not go to the Trump rally only because it would have required spending an entire day waiting to go into the Trump rally. There was a big line.
Yeah.
More power to him. But it's as they say, it is interesting. It is a process. It is a little bit of theater. Yeah, maybe it isn't entirely the real world, but it's a lot closer than spring training.
Well, okay, fair enough. We'll talk about baseball now, but I'll just say this. If for nothing else, the New Hampshire primary this year gave us an expression I had never heard before.
You're a line dog-faced pony soldier.
I think he's used that before.
I had never heard that.
I have not heard it before either.
Yeah, lying dog-faced pony soldier. You know, Phil, you're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Thank you.
I heard an interesting phrase that I'd never heard about from James Carville, who was speaking at a Michael Bennett. It had to do with a pineapple, but I can't really get into it.
Okay, now I've wasted too much time on this. Shame on me. Phil, I have to take a quick commercial break. Come back and tell me, how close are the Cubs, does anybody know, to having their games on TV in Chicago? Phil Rosenthal writes about sports and the media for the Chicago Tribune, and he's been following as close as anybody the sort of Cubs marquee Sinclair Nexus. So, Phil, how close are we to having Cubs games on TV in Chicago?
Well, it depends on who your carrier is. I mean, I have RCN. My RCN has cut a deal with Marquee to carry the Cubs. Marquee's going to carry about 150 of those games, the ones that aren't on ESPN or Fox TV. And as a result, that's fine. But half of the Chicago area uses Comcast. There is no deal with Comcast as of yet. And so, we'll see. I think in terms of closer, the basic theory here is that they're closer if only because the calendar is closer to opening day.
Right.
And there's no great impetus to do the deal, although Marquee is going to make its debut on February 22nd, a couple Saturdays from now, with a spring training game versus the A's. The spring training games aren't necessarily big draws. People like to know they're there, but they don't necessarily make their plans around them. I don't know that there's any great incentive for Comcast to cut a deal in time for that, because once you cut a deal, then you got to start paying for the channel. And once you start paying for the channel, then you're probably going to start passing it along to your customers, and some will be thrilled to have it, but others may not be so thrilled.
Well, they're going to have to face that sooner or later. What about RCN? So as an RCN subscriber, did your rates go up? Was there a surcharge?
I don't know yet. Partly because I live in a building where they do a mass deal, and they do it a few years out. So we won't see a raise. I have seen customers of, say, I think Mediacom, which has a deal with Marquee, I think their bill, they said, went up $2 or $3 a month because of this. We'll see, we'll see as it starts to.
And the math on that, tell me if this is how it works, Phil. So then this network Marquee says to the people at RCN or any of these other carriers, if you want the Cubs channel and all of the other things that go with it, the betting shows and the preseason games and the games and all of that, you don't get it for free. We're going to charge you. Here's what we're going to charge you. Then they essentially take their customer base and divide into that and say, here's what it costs per customer, and then they pass that cost along.
Yes, it's not like HBO where you say, I want HBO, I'm going to pay X numbers of dollars, I will now get HBO every month. It is the way the regional sports network business model works is they take their pay based on total reach, whether you want to watch the show or not. This is not uncommon in cable channels. It's true of ESPN, to Disney Channel, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. All channels kind of do it this way, unless there's a different revenue model like home shopping. And the cable carrier pays an amount of money per subscriber that they have, whether that subscriber wants it or not.
Yeah.
And so the costs are spread over a large number of people, but you also don't have a choice whether you're paying for it or not.
Sure. So that's where some Comcast people have said, well, I'm not going to do it. Then I'll cut the cord.
Yeah, but they don't have a say. Well, Comcast will make that decision for them.
What do you mean?
And that's part of the calculations that go into, can we, what can we afford to pay for this thing, and how much are we going to do it? The Cubs will tell you, well, look, all these other companies have agreed to the deals, whether it's DirecTV or RCN or I think Frontier way out in the hinterlands, but that's all well and good. Comcast will get a deal. Because of their size, they'll be able to get what's known as a most favored nations clause. And what that means is whoever has the best available deal, we get to match it. And what they're going to try and do is drive the price down for everybody. And so we'll see how successful. I think, as I say, when push comes to shove in the end, I think the big deadline right now is opening day. If they don't have a deal by opening day, then I'm not sure there's as great a rush for it, because I think, again, early season baseball, let's see how the Cubs get off to a start. Let's see what the actual demand is. Who actually calls Comcast and starts to complain and drop the service?
Okay, but the Cubs could always do this. If you're saying, okay, well then, I mean, I think that's a ridiculous scenario, and maybe it is ridiculous, but if on opening day the Cubs games are not available to Chicago Comcast subscribers, I think that is really thumbing your nose at your fan base.
Well, it is, but they're going to say it's not us, it's Comcast.
Oh, but it's not, but it's not, because
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just telling you that's how it's going to be.
But I don't think that's even true. The Cubs could lower the price. The network could make it available to a Comcast company for a lesser price. It's how much they want to charge.
But if they do, you know that a deal like with DirecTV, they cut a deal with DirecTV. If Comcast gets a better price, DirecTV is going to get a better price. And so the total amount that comes into the Cubs goes lower.
Boo-hoo.
And started budgeting. Well, I'm not mad at you,
Phil, but I'm just, I have no sympathy for them.
This is the way it's going to work, and I think the other thing, and if you look in other markets, like in Denver, there's a big standoff with the RSNs, the regional sports networks, and the carriers. In Los Angeles, with the Dodgers, there's a huge, for years, there's been this big deal where they can't get it in those areas. Now, meanwhile, the Dodgers have become one of the most successful teams in baseball, and their attendance is great, but their reach of their TV is not good, and that's an issue.
Think about that.
I am thinking about it.
No, but I mean, really, the Dodgers could win 100 games this year, and people in Los Angeles, hundreds of thousands of them, can't even watch it on TV locally.
And that has been how it's been for 6 or 7 years,
although
they have sold off a few games to local TV, and again, there are games on ESPN that get picked up, and there are games on Fox. In this market, it's Channel 32. There are Fox 32 games that'll be on, you know, on the weekends. So it's not like they're completely shut out. But yeah, the Chicago has been traditionally very spoiled in that it's had so many games available over free over the air broadcast television. And again, I'm not carrying the Cubs' water on this. I think this is a pox on both their houses if they can't get a deal done. But I will tell you, the Cubs will tell you know what the Cubs' point of view on this is. If you have cable, you're paying the money for, you know, channels to carry these things, and they point to the White Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks that are on a channel like this, and they already have a deal in place. The Comcast is a business partner in there. There are a lot of things in this that are a little hinky. But it's an ugly situation if it comes down to I can't watch the games I want to watch, especially if people outside of the Chicago market can then watch them. I think one of the options you're going to see, and they don't have deals announced for this, but you know it's going to be critical to get streaming deals in, because that'll put some pressure on both. Again, I have an option if I want to watch this thing, you know. But the streaming option again would be like with Hulu Live TV, YouTube TV. Some of these other services where, again, you're paying a monthly fee. It's like subscribing to cable.
By the way, when we say Comcast, that's Xfinity, right?
Comcast Xfinity, that's absolutely right.
And so tell me if I'm right on this. I have heard nothing.
Oh, you're always right on this, son.
No, I'm loud. I'm not right. So just tell me, though, if this is a correct assessment of where we are, that the deal will get done, that it will be done by the first pitch of the regular season, that it will cost the average subscriber about $5 more, and that as much as people want to say, well, then I'm not going to do it, Cubs fans will sign up for it.
Yeah, I don't know about my guess is there will be a deal around opening day. And by the way, again, with these ESPN games, I think two of the first four Cubs games this season are on ESPN. So that's something to look forward to, I guess. I don't know, and I don't know exactly the price. It may be, as I say, MediaCom is, I think, telling people $2 or $3 a month. So, you know, again, you don't know how they're shuffling the paperwork on it, and you know, maybe they're paying less for something else and able to or eager enough to have it that they're willing to cut a little bit of their profit margin. That doesn't happen very often. I'm not privy to their thinking, but that I don't know exactly what the price is, and I also don't know the timetable for it.
All right,
whether
but one last thing
charging in a month or two.
One last thing about this, Phil Rosenthal for the Tribune's on the line. He's talked to us about this before, and I think some people are feeling like Anthony does online too. Hey, Anthony, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Well, like I just said, I'm 65 years old. I've been listening to the Cubs or watching the Cubs for forever. But with all of this going on, I'll be honest with you, it's all about money, and it's starting to tick everybody off, especially me and my family. But the bottom line is they spent a lot of money on hotels and things like that. They spent nothing on the team, and I'm not thrilled about the manager situation either. But as far as I'm concerned, from what I'm seeing, I'll listen to them on the radio like I did back in the 60s and 70s, because I don't really care to pay money to see this.
I wanted to hear your voice and your tone. Phil gets the last 30 seconds. You're not the Cubs.
That's a legitimate viewpoint. Yeah. I think that's true. I think, and baseball more so than other sports. There are some sports that if you had a choice of watching or listening to, you would choose watching 95% of the time. I'm not sure baseball is that sport. Baseball is great because you can do things while you're listening to it. You don't have to focus on every little thing. And I think, radio, in many respects, and again, it's still free, radio is a terrific way to enjoy baseball. So I think that we'll see how loyal and dedicated and invested Cubs fans are. They may be at a turning point here.
I'm going to call you again on this and have more animated conversations with you, if you don't mind, Phil.
I love it. Happy to do it.
Phil,
don't you feel like he was yelling at you a little, Phil?
I know. I don't know why. Because you know why, Phil? Marquee won't come on the air. The Sinclair won't come on the air. The Cubs said they don't want
to. And I'm trying to articulate their viewpoint. I don't have a horse in this race. I do think as a consumer, you want choice. But again, they're not giving you choice because you're going to pay for this thing whether you want it or not.
Yeah, that's that.
And so it's left to the two negotiating sides to sort of find an agreement that's tenable.
Time's up. Talk to you again. Thank you, Phil.
Anytime.
Gee, Suki, what's coming up with you today?
We're going to be talking about the Me Too movement in the corporate world and what happens next and what companies and corporations can do about it. And also, we're going to be taking calls for Terry Savage, which is always a Winter's Business Lunch favorite.
Yeah, no kidding. A popular segment and a timely one with the Weinstein thing just happening, too. So I like the sound of both. That's all coming up.